For those who are watching online or in person, we just want to say to each of you, we've been taking a journey through the life of Jesus. And if you're new, you might not know that. But our journey through the life of Jesus, week by week, has been a fun ride for us. We have a ways to go. Today, we're going to pause. Today, we're going to actually have a conversation about the mama of Jesus, because it's Mother's Day. So we're going to talk about Jesus' mama today. See, why are we doing that? We want to just focus on the celebration of motherhood. We have moms all over the room. We have soon-to-be moms, a couple soon-to-be moms of twins, 10 days out from a baby, baby number four over here. And we have new babies up front here. And we have people who are longtime moms. And we want to celebrate motherhood a little bit today. So we're going to talk about Jesus' mama today. Now, before I get started, I want to just say this to you. This is going to be a different kind of a message. Normally what we do is we drive to a very specific sermon point and application. Like we're going to it. It's kind of like getting in the car and saying, here's where I'm driving us. Here's our destination. This is the action step to take home. Last week, we took on like 10 leadership principles from the prodigal son. Very intentional. Today's going to be a different kind of an experience, just telling you up front. Today's kind of like getting in the car, and we're going to take a drive, but it's more of a scenic drive to enjoy nature. We're not exactly going to any hard spot particularly. We're just kind of enjoying the scenery together in the ride. And it's a lot of ground to cover as we look at the arc of Mary's life and think about motherhood together for a little while. There's a lot to cover. I need all of the time I have and maybe a pinch more. So let's jump in. Ready? Luke 1. Before I go on the screen, let me just give you the backstory. A young woman named Mary. She's engaged to get married to Joseph. Some of you girls remember when you were getting married, the excitement, the planning, picking out your dress, picking out the colors, picking out your bridal party. I know that weddings were different back in those days, perhaps than they are now a little bit, but there was still the excitement of getting married and planning your future, planning that special day, planning the rest of your life, and Mary's all excited. One day, an angel comes to her and says, Mary, God has chosen you and is asking you to be the one to bear, to carry the Messiah, the long-promised Savior, into the world. Mary was a girl of faith, as we're going to see throughout her life. And no doubt she had heard the stories throughout her years about how that God had promised in ancient times, hundreds of years ago, that he was going to send a Savior, a Messiah, into the world one day. And the prophecy through Isaiah that a virgin would conceive and bear a son. People got to wonder, how is that even possible? Maybe they dismissed it or thought there's another explanation or whatever. And now an angel is standing there with Mary saying to her, you're the one. You're the girl, and God's going to have you be the mother of the Messiah if you'll let him. God never forces himself on you. He always offers us a chance to do his will, but he came to Mary and said, this is what God wants for you. And this is going to totally disrupt Mary's entire life. All the planning, all the future. How do you explain that to Joseph? Hey, how you doing today? Oh, by the way, I'm pregnant. Oh, I know we've not been together, but I've not been with anybody. I promise, it's a miracle. I wonder how many people have tried that through the centuries since. I don't know, Mom. Praise the Lord, he did it again, you know, but I don't know. But Mary's going to have to sell this thing to her fiance. Like, I'm expecting, but it's really God, you know. And so God is inviting her into this opportunity, and it's going to change. Listen, it's going to change all of her life, all the things she's been planning up until this moment. And look what she says in Luke 1:38. Mary responded, I am the Lord's servant. May everything you have said about me come true. I believe this is Mary giving her consent. This is Mary saying, yes, Lord, I accept that opportunity. I'll do it. She's talking, she's saying, God, whatever you want, I'll serve you. That's a big step. A few months later, she leaves. They live in a little village called Nazareth. You ought to know about Nazareth because it's going to come up today. Nazareth is a very small, probably insignificant village in the region of Galilee. Not a lot's known about Nazareth. A couple old taglines tell us that it wasn't a very important place. Probably not a very well-off place. That's where she lived. And of course, now she's pregnant. She leaves to go down to the hill country of Judea, probably to give Joseph time to sort that out. Right? And honestly, when the baby bumps start showing, people ask questions, so she's going to go. And so she heads down to the hill country of Judea to visit her cousin Elizabeth, who, by the way, is also pregnant. Another amazing story, but not time for today. And when she walks into Elizabeth's house, so much happens. The short story is Elizabeth is filled with God's Spirit, and she begins to just speak blessing over Mary and the baby that she's carrying. And it's so validating because originally she was told this would happen, and it has happened, and she's pregnant. And I know that for some of us, you're hearing the story, and you're like, Arlen, I cannot relate to the story. You're talking about Mother's Day, but I don't have, you know, baby Jesus. I mean, like, my children are not the Messiah. I'm sure your kids are wonderful. But they're not that wonderful. But here's what we can relate to. Some of you moms can relate to an unexpected pregnancy that you weren't planning. That changes your life in a moment, right? Some of you moms can relate to, that's not in the plan. You got the pregnancy test in the bathroom. Things are off-timed, and you got a pregnancy test, and on the bathroom counter, there is the proof, and you're like, oh my goodness. When he gets home, what's he going to say? And, you know. Others of you planned and tried, and then it happened, and then you're still shocked. And here's the thing. Mary's experienced all that. Like, wait, this is not the plan, but okay, that's what God wants. It's awesome. Now she's a few months in, she's visiting a friend, and Elizabeth is speaking more affirmation over her pregnancy. And how do we relate to that today? I think for us today, it's kind of like when you moms go into the doctor to hear the heartbeat for the first time, or see the ultrasound on the screen, see the baby moving around, perhaps find out the gender. It's like, oh my goodness, it just got a little bit more real, didn't it? I mean, it was real already, but it's even more real when you see the baby on the screen. And you're so excited about what happens next. And Mary responds in Luke 1:46. Mary responded, "Oh, how my soul praises the Lord. How my spirit rejoices in God my Savior." She's excited, mom. She's excited like any new parent's going to be. This is happening. This is confirmation. This is real. I'm so looking forward to what's next. Well, she goes back to Nazareth, and around that time, the Roman government, who controls this whole area and region, decides they want to get more tax dollars out of all their provinces. So they order everyone goes back to their ancestral hometowns and does a census so they can know who they're working with. And it's a decreed royally from Caesar himself. Joseph, her husband, Joseph takes Mary to be his wife now. But Joseph needs to go down to register in his hometown of Bethlehem. By the way, Bethlehem is a little town, a little suburb outside of the city of Jerusalem. Just a little town near the capital city, well, former capital of Israel, but just outside of Jerusalem. And so he's got to go to Bethlehem to register for the census. He doesn't want to leave his very pregnant wife by herself. But can you wait till later? Is it hard to shuffle with a baby? Do you have to go now? He takes her with him. They arrive in Bethlehem. While they're there, there's no room in the inn because everyone else has come into town for the same reasons, apparently. There's no space to rent. And finally, they're given a spot to stay in a stable, which I imagine was kind of typical. It may not be exactly the way we picture it today. Doesn't matter. Point being that people would sometimes through history stay in comfortable accommodations as an alternative. And they're in a stable because there's no place in the inn like they hoped. And while they're in there, she goes into labor. And I have always wondered in my weird brain, maybe everyone else has wondered too, maybe no one else has, and I'm just weird. But I've always wondered, I wonder how hard labor was for Mary, labor and delivery, right? Because labor is a whole thing. Some of you moms have stories. You have enough kids. You have different stories for each one about how it was challenging. How hard was it to give birth to Jesus? It was her first child, so there's something there. Or did Jesus make it easy on her? Don't worry, mom, I got you. Woo, he's out, you know. I don't know. But I imagine that she is exhausted when it's done, and she takes that baby and she wraps him in strips of cloth, and she lays him in the manger right there in the stable. And she's recovering, she's resting. And guess who's not there? All the grandparents back in Nazareth to come hold the baby and be a part of this moment. It's just her in recovery in this unintentional situation. But guess who does show up? A bunch of shepherds peeking around the corner. A bunch of shepherds show up. Like, she does get visitors, apparently. They're like, hey, we heard there's a baby. We were out in the fields, and an angel came and told us the baby is being born, and it was the Messiah, and this would be a sign. And there was a bunch of angels were out there singing to us, and so we came by to see, and sure enough, they said he'd be lying in a manger. We know who that is. And it was such a moment. They left there, and they began to tell everyone around town what was happening. And it says in Luke 2:18, all who heard the shepherd's story were astonished, but Mary kept all these things in her heart, and she thought about them often. I think Mary's taking one of those little mental pictures. Click. You know what I'm saying? Right then. Don't forget this moment. You know what I'm talking about, moms, don't you? Have that moment in your life where you just say, don't forget this. It's going to go so fast. And you look back as your life goes on and you remember what once happened. You remember that moment in time when your baby was new, when your baby was growing, when your child was young. And she takes a mental picture to think about and look back on throughout her life. A few days later, they go to nearby Jerusalem for what's basically, it's a longer story. I don't have time. It's not important today. But they basically go for what we might call a baby dedication and a few other things in Jerusalem. And parents whose kids were born at a certain time would come at the same time. And so Mary and Joseph are going to Jerusalem, and other parents are doing the same thing that day at the temple. And of course, you're supposed to bring, according to their scriptures, a gift with you of a young lamb. However, the laws allowed them that if they were too poor to afford a lamb, they could bring two turtle doves or a couple pigeons. And because Joseph and Mary were from Nazareth, probably weren't very wealthy, they'd been staying in Bethlehem far from home, they brought two turtle doves and a partridge and a pear tree. That's what they brought. But no, they brought what they could. They didn't have much, so they brought it with them. And what that means is they're walking into the special moment with other families perhaps, and they have a poor person's gift. And that's got to be awkward. That's got to feel self-conscious. Well, are people looking at you and judging you? Are they saying, are they fit to be parents? You know, it's like we have baby dedication, you know, and sometimes it's a big moment, people dress up, the baby's dressed up, pictures are being taken. You want to stand out in a good way, but not in a bad way. They're walking in saying, it's us and our kid and our two turtles. Oh, look at these nice families. And I wonder how self-conscious they may have felt. But while they're in the temple, two older people greet them. One is an older man named Simeon, and one is an older woman named Anna. And they actually come and dote on their baby. Not during the service, but they do on the baby. And they make him feel special. And they love on him. And they say, hey, I think something special for you. I think something special going on. God's doing something with you. Thank God for the older people as we get older who love the young families, who love the young families around us. Who don't become crotchety old people, right? Who don't sit there and say, kids these days, young people, but instead say, hey, let me encourage a young family. Let me bless them. Let me speak into their life and say, we're for you. And Simeon and Anna come by. Simeon's an old man who said that before he died, God promised him he would see the Messiah with his very eyes. Anna was an older woman whose husband died when she was young. She spent the many decades of her life since then serving God in the temple. This is what's happening. It says in Luke 2:34, then Simeon blessed them. This is the old man. Simeon blessed them. And he said to Mary, the baby's mother, this child is destined to cause many in Israel to fall and many others to rise. He has been sent as a sign from God, but many will oppose him. As a result, the deepest thoughts of many hearts will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your very soul. And I have to wonder what Mary felt hearing those words. For God to be saying, for Simeon to be saying to her, hey, it's going to be a wonderful and a painful journey. Sometimes people will say to young parents, oh, you're excited to have a baby, huh? You don't know what you got yourself into. Look what you've done. And they're usually joking. Some people take offense to that and say that's not appropriate. But the bottom line is that we don't know. We try to be encouraging. But Simeon, for some reason here, says, Mary, this child is special and it's going to be amazing. Also, Mary, it's going to break your heart along the way. In fact, at his end of this story, you have a sword pierced through your very soul. He just felt she needed to know that. And I don't know why. But it reminds me, parents, it reminds me, mamas, that's something we learn when we have children, right? that having a child opens your heart in ways you never expected. You feel love that you never knew you could feel. And you feel pain you never knew you could feel. You have joys you never imagined you experienced. You have hurts along the way if you live long enough. That's just how life goes. That's what motherhood does. It changes everything so much. Sometimes your most precious gift can also be your most potent grief. And Mary's going to live to see all the good and some bad. And Simeon warns her. And it doesn't take long before some of the tough times kick in. Because you see, they leave Jerusalem and they go back to Bethlehem. Apparently, they never returned back to Nazareth. They stayed in Bethlehem. Probably because how do you travel home with a young baby? Joseph probably found some side work to do to buy some food while he was in Bethlehem. And side work turned into more side work. They eventually moved into a house. Got a house instead of a stable. They're inside. They've got their own place. Wise men come from the east following a star in prophecy to see their baby and confirm God's plan. They're living their life. They have other families around them. They're getting to know other young families. And all of a sudden, King Herod gets word that there's a baby nearby that's being called the King of the Jews. And if you know the story of Herod, he was appointed by the Roman government to run the region of Judea. And he was brutal. And I can tell you stories all day long about Herod's brutality to his own family. Doesn't matter right now. What he does when he hears of this baby is he decides it's a threat to his own posterity. So he sends his soldiers to go through the surrounding areas around Bethlehem and the towns around there and kill every single child under the age of 2. Talk about painful for all those families. As those soldiers walked in and slaughtered their little ones. Talk about a sword piercing their very souls. And the grief as a politically motivated madman takes lives ruthlessly in a very personal and upfront way. And suddenly, Joseph is warned to leave before they experience the same thing. And in Matthew 2:14, it says, that night, Joseph left for Egypt with the child and with Mary, his mother. And they stayed there until Herod's death. And all of a sudden, they're far away trying to protect their baby in Egypt. And for Mary, you know about life change for Mary? Moms, think about this. She was a little while ago, she was preparing to get married and start her life as she planned it. Then she gets pregnant. Then they move down to Bethlehem. Then she gives birth. Then they stay in Bethlehem. Now they're moving to Egypt. And meanwhile, her child's growing and changing all the time. Her home is changing. Third place she's lived in a while. All of this is happening so fast to her. A lot has happened since the first angel talked to her. And they stay in Egypt until Herod dies. I don't know if that's how long that was. I don't know if it's years. It doesn't say. But at some point, they decide to go back home, but they're afraid to go back to Bethlehem. For one, the main reason is because maybe people would still try to kill their son. But the other reason could be, how do you go back to Bethlehem and see all the other young families you left behind whose children were killed? Hey, we're back. How are you doing? Oh, that's too bad. We're okay. So they just head back north to Nazareth where they first came from. And they raised their family. By the way, Joseph and Mary had a lot of kids. Like when you read the list, you're like, holy cow. They had a lot of kids. Like several boys, a bunch of girls. They had a huge family. Jesus was the oldest. Joseph was not his biological father, but Joseph was the father who raised him. That's the only one he knew, right, on this earth. And Jesus was the oldest of the whole clan of kids. And it says in Luke 2:41 that every year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the Passover festival. Now, this is an insight into the kind of family he grew up in. It's a religiously devout family of faith. Because if you're going down to the Passover was like their Independence Day, but it was bigger than that. It was a longer festival, and it was very religious and spiritual. And for them, to go every year to the Passover festival in Jerusalem means that they were the kind of family that every week, no doubt, would go to the synagogue in Nazareth. They were a family of faith. And every year they'd take the whole group. And when you travel to Jerusalem for Passover, you don't travel alone. You take the family. You got cousins and siblings and friends and their kids. You're an entourage. You know why? It's safer that way from bandits on the road and from other people that could harm you. And the entourage would travel down from Nazareth. They'd go to Passover. They'd worship. They'd go back home afterwards. In verse number 42, it tells us that when Jesus was 12 years old, they attended that festival as usual. just another year going to Jerusalem. The problem this time is when they got there and they went to go home, Jesus decided to stay behind and didn't tell the family. If your kids ever say, I'm just going to go to my friend's house and not tell you where I'm at, he just stays behind and they have no idea. They start going home and they're like, they don't even know he's missing. Now, before you judge them, I want to ask an honest hand raise. How many of you have ever lost one of your children for at least a few minutes? My hand is up. Okay, a bunch of honest people here, some liars as well. Okay, I'll tell you, it's terrifying. We've probably lost all three of our kids in a different way at different times, okay? I remember when we first lost Brett in a store, JCPenney, and we found him in the judgment we felt from some workers. And Lindsay was in the neighborhood one time, gave us a little scare. But I mean, I'm telling you, it's terrifying. And Jesus' parents, they just lost track of him as they left Jerusalem. It's an honest mistake. You're probably, as a parent, you're worried about your youngest child, your baby, right? That's the one you're looking out for. The 12-year-old's going to be okay. It's Jesus. They probably did the Kevin McAllister Home Alone count, you know, counted all the kids and got the neighbor kid in there and accidentally missed them. So they leave and they're like partway, they travel all day. They stop for dinner. They're like, okay, get the kids around the family. Where's Jesus? Where's he at? And they realize he's not anywhere. They look everywhere in the group. And they go, they're terrified. They go all the way back to Jerusalem to search for their missing 12-year-old. Now, I asked some of you parents if you lost a child before. Probably if you did, it was only for a few minutes or so. And that was bad. Because in a few minutes of your child being missing, mom and dad, your mind can go to a lot of scary places very quickly of what may have happened to them and how bad the world is. They didn't lose Jesus for 3 minutes or 3 hours. They searched for him for 3 days in the city of Jerusalem, which was packed. 3 days. Do you sleep? Do you go to bed at all? Do you keep pushing through? If Mary does lay down to rest, how well does she sleep? Does she pray? Hey, God, hi, how are you? It's me. Oh, by the way, I lost your kid. They're coming out with the next movie, Home Alone Part Whatever, Lost in Jerusalem. And they don't know what to do. And finally, after 3 long days, they search the temple. The temple was a very big complex, Herod's temple. But they search a place they never thought to search before. The boring old room where a bunch of men sit around and discuss theology. All the important guys. And they're like, well, you wouldn't be in there. They finally turn over that rock. And there he is sitting in the middle of them, asking questions and talking. And they're like, what in the world? And look at Mary's reaction. I love it. Luke 2:48. Son, his mother said to him, why have you done this to us? Your father and I have been frantic, searching for you everywhere. Moms, you ever look at your kid one time and say, I'm so glad you're okay. I thought you were dead, and now I'm going to kill you. And she's like, son, we've been freaking out. Your father and I have been sick to our stomachs, frantically searching for you. And look what Jesus says to her. He says in verse 49, but why did you need to search? He asked, didn't you know that I must be in my father's house? Now, listen, we've discussed before what Jesus meant by that. But just for a moment, put yourself in Mary's shoes. You've been worried sick. You finally find the kid. And your 12-year-old decides it's time to give you a talk. And he doesn't say, oh, mom, you must have been worried so sick. And I am so very sorry. That must have been terrible. Are you okay? He's like, what were you worried about? Then he pulls the dad card. I hear you mention my father. Actually, he's my father, and I was in my father's house. Oh, that's what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear a lecture from my 12-year-old who left our presence without permission and then tells me, well, why didn't you really think I was? Come here, you know. And so this is a moment. I'm just being real here. In verse 51, it says, they didn't understand what he meant. They're like, what is he talking about? Just let's go home. Verse 51 says, then he returned to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. And his mother stored all these things in her heart, AKA she ain't never forgetting this story. For all the little click mental picture moments along life, this is a story that you'll remember for the rest of your life. Oh, there's that time. I thought it was hard when he was a toddler. I'm like, I'll never stop chasing him. Wait till he's grown and responsible. And now he's a 12-year-old going off on his own. And then when we finally track him down, not knowing where he went, he's like, well, don't you know where I'd be? Look who knows so much. All her life, she'll remember that story. One of those touch points of parenting. Moms, you've been there, right? You're like, I thought 3 was hard. Then 13 happened. 13's wonderful. Don't get me wrong. If you're 13 years old, you're awesome. You're perfect. I'm just being real. Okay. Well, Jesus grows up. And he doesn't start his ministry right away. Jesus grows up and he stays around and takes care of mom, because what happens is Joseph, Mary's husband, dies. He was older than Mary. We don't know how much older, but he was older. I don't know how he dies. He was a carpenter by trade, and at some point he dies. He's out of the picture. And Jesus sticks around, and maybe he becomes a carpenter. He becomes a carpenter himself. We know that. Maybe he helps take care of his mom and his siblings as they finish growing, and he just takes care of his family until one day people are grown, and Jesus is like, I need to start my ministry. And at the age of 30, he branches off. Baptism, wilderness, all the stories about Jesus begin at 30. And in John chapter 2, verse 1, he's back home by his family once his ministry has begun. And John 2, verse 1 says, the next day, there was a wedding celebration in the village of Cana in Galilee. And it says Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the celebration. So it must be someone they all knew was getting married. And Jesus is there with his crowd, and Jesus says, Mom, it's fun when your kids grow up and life brings you to the same place for an event. They're all together. It says the wine supply ran out during the festivities, so Jesus' mother told him, they have no more wine. She knew what she was asking him to do. She wanted to help the people, but she also wanted to show off her son can help, right? I mean, it's both. They have no more wine. Look at his response in verse 4. Dear woman, that is not our problem, Jesus replied. My time has not yet come. But his mother told the servants, do whatever he tells you to do. In other words, mom, she's like, I know he's pushing back at me, but I know he'll do it. And now she gets to watch her son in action. She goes watch her son help people. Mamas, you know what it feels like when your kids grow up and they're doing well? And they're at work, and you get to watch them do their thing, and you get to cheer them on, and other people are going to see, and he's going to help people, and I'm so proud of my kids. And so her mom is there, and she's excited. But here's the deal. It starts to get really, really hard after that. Because Jesus doesn't seem to know when enough is enough. Can you believe it? He begins to work so hard, he burns the candle at both ends from that point on. The story tells us that crowds would throng him because of his miracles and his teaching. Wherever he would go, he was a celebrity. Everywhere he'd go, he'd be thronged from morning until night, sometimes not even having enough time to eat. In fact, oftentimes he'd send people home for bedtime. He'd go into a private place to pray because it's the only time he could find to pray, and he knew he needed to talk to God, so he'd give up his sleep time to pray, come back and work all day with people. He was exhausting himself. He'd fall asleep in the middle of a boat during a storm. He's working so hard, and at one point he says, I got to do the work of him who sent me while I have time, while it's daytime, because the night is coming when I can no longer work. My life is only going to be for so long, and I got to get after it. Got to make hay while the sun shines. And so he worked and worked and worked. He once said that foxes have dens and birds of the air have nests, but I don't even have a place to call home. He was nomadic. He was minimalistic. He was traveling and sacrificing with every ounce of his being. And honestly, it began to freak out his family. Mark chapter 3, verse 20 tells us about it. It says, one time, Jesus entered a house, and the crowds began to gather again. Soon, he and his disciples could not even find time to eat. Again. Look at verse 21. When his family heard what was happening, they tried to take him away. He's out of his mind, they said. Now, we're going to see in just a few verses later that his family in this verse refers to his mom and his siblings. Remember, Joseph's passed away. His mom and his siblings are there. They're close enough to hear what's going on, and they're worried about him. He's not resting. He's not taking care of himself. He's not eating right. And they decide they need to have an intervention to stop him from being crazy. So they're going to try and take him away, and he's lost his mind. Moms, I want to ask you a question. Moms, especially older moms, When do you stop worrying about your kids?
Never.
Never. Right? I asked my mom a couple years ago. My mom, by the way, watches our services online. Hi, Mom. Online here. I asked my mom a couple years ago when my kids were grown. I said, Mom, at what age do you stop worrying about your kids? And she says, how old are you? I'm like, oh, okay. You don't stop worrying about your kids, right? And Jesus is working hard, and you're like, well, he's Jesus. But they're worried. They're like, we got to do something. We got to get him out of here. He needs to take care of himself. They're worried about him. And a few verses later, look at verse 31. It says, then Jesus' mother and brothers came to see him. They stood outside and sent word for him to come out and talk with them. They want to have a conversation. Like, hey, let them know we're here. Tell them. There was a crowd sitting around Jesus, and someone said, hey, your mother and your brothers are outside asking for you. And people would expect that he's going to say, time out, everyone take lunch break, we'll get together later. But that's not what he says. Check it out. Jesus replied, who is my mother? Who are my brothers? Then he looked at those around him and said, look, these are my mother and brothers. Anyone who does God's will is my brother and sister and mother. Now, we've talked about this passage before in our journey through the life of Jesus. We know what he was trying to say here. But for a minute, can you put yourself in mama's shoes? They were worried about him. They come all this way. They're right outside saying, let him know we're here. Let him know we're here. And the response they get is, I'm busy working. I'm teaching a greater truth. He was. But imagine the family who's trying to take him away because they're worried about him. Moms, when your kids are little, you were their entire world, weren't you? You were their entire world. I mean, they wanted to eat, you fed them. They had an owie or a boo-boo, you fixed it. They want to sit in your lap and cuddle with you, that was you. You were their entire world. And then they become 12-year-olds who just don't tell you where they're going. And then you're like, when you find them, you're like, well, didn't you know where I was going? Not all 12-year-olds do that. I'm just picking on Jesus here. And then they become adults. And they used to be, you used to be their entire world, Mom. And you know what happens later? Now you're a part of their world, but their world is very big and sometimes very busy. You wish you saw them more and you worry about them and you come by. And here's Jesus like, ah, this is my family right here. That's hard. Because here's the thing. Mary was just a girl planning her own life when all this unfacted. And now she's over here saying, these kids became my whole world. And now I feel like it's a lot of memories. I live with a lot of memories I've kept through the years and life has changed. It's a hard story. Well, guess what? Jesus does come by to visit, thankfully. Three chapters later in Mark chapter 6, it says Jesus left that part of the country and returned with his disciples to Nazareth, his hometown. He come home for a visit, finally. That's good. The next Sabbath, he was teaching. Now, hold on. The next Sabbath means that he stayed for a while. He was in town for a while. He saw mom. He saw the siblings. He saw the cousins. And then that next Sabbath, he's still there. So he begins teaching in the synagogue. And many who heard him were amazed. They asked, where did he get all this wisdom and the power to perform such miracles? Here's what's going on. Mary's hometown crowd at her hometown synagogue gets to hear her son speak. And he's amazing. And you know, moms and dads, how proud you are when your kids are doing awesome and your friends get to see how, you want to show them off. Get the bumper sticker. My child is on the A honor roll. I was like, my son threw a touchdown pass in the football game Friday. My son is the Messiah. Well, excuse us, Messiah mom. The floor is all yours, you know. I mean, what do you do? She has the ultimate moment. She's over at the synagogue and Jesus is speaking and she's like so proud as a parent. But look what happens next. It says, then they scoffed. He's just a carpenter. The son of Mary, the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon, and his sisters live right here among us. They were deeply offended and refused to believe in him. This is one of two visits Jesus makes to Nazareth. The other time, a bunch of people get mad at him and try to kill him in his hometown. He gets away. That's hurtful. Moms, can we relate to this? None of us like to be criticized. It's not fun. But criticize my children, mistreat my children, well, that's a whole different ballgame. I might complain about that once in a while, but don't mistreat them. That's a whole other ballgame. How do you go on from that? Even if they're adults, don't do that. Jesus blows it off. Jesus is like, whatever. He leaves town. He's like, I'm out of here. And so he leaves. He leaves with some kind of a snarky comment about how that prophets are not honored in their own hometown, and he just goes away. But guess who still lives there with all those people who just mistreated him? His family. I imagine how the next week went for them. Hey, Mary, you want to come to the tea party? No, I don't think I will. What's wrong with her? It's hard. And it doesn't get easier, because from wherever Jesus goes from here, the pressure heats up. The religious leaders who are threatened by his ministry try to kill him. They try to beat, they constantly bombard him with trouble. Eventually, Jesus finds himself back in Jerusalem. Don't miss this. Back in Jerusalem, because every year since he was a boy, he went back to the city for the Passover. And Mary's there too, because again, she went every year her whole life as well, whether she's now an empty nester and a widow following him around, or whether she lives in Nazareth but takes her annual pilgrimage. She's in Jerusalem. Jesus is in Jerusalem. It's Passover. And the religious leaders finally convince one of Jesus' disciples to get paid to betray him, and they're able to arrest him when he's away from the crowds in a garden late at night praying. They take him to their private quarters, they condemn him to death, and they physically abuse him. The next morning, they turn him over to the Roman leader, Pilate, governor Pilate, and ask him to do what only he can authorize, execute Jesus. And I don't know when Mary hears about this word. Does she hear that night when he's arrested, or does she wake up the next morning and someone tells her? But at some point, she's no doubt at Pilate's hall waiting to see where her son is at. And they give him a Roman beating, a scourging that kills some people and definitely hurt almost everybody else. And they haul him out beaten and mocked and with a crown of thorns and goofy attire. And they watch this, and she, imagine her heart dropping in her chest to see her son beaten like that. And the crowd is raucous. The crowd's yelling, "Crucify him, crucify him." And Pilate says, "Fine, whatever you want, just calm down." And he sentences him to death. Not just death sentence, that's bad enough. A humane execution, if there's such a thing, is bad enough. Roman crucifixion. It was reserved for the worst of people, to make an example out of them. Don't cross Rome. It was vile, it was vicious, it was bloody, and it was painful and humiliating. People always think about crucifixion as, you know, the cross of Jesus being way in the air, like these beautiful crosses. It was actually at ground level, just above eye level. People can see you face to face. Naked, beaten, humiliated, and dying. It was in your face, so people would be offended by the, they would be just, don't mess with Rome. But it was also done that way so you can mock the person in case that you had a problem with who they were. It was humiliating. Jesus suffered on that cross right there between two criminals. And on the way to that cross, as he's walking down the Via Dolorosa, he drops the cross that he's asked to carry because he's so beaten and weak. And they have to have someone carry it for him. And his mom is there walking the path. And they nail him to that cross and they drop it in the ground. And she watches her son die. John 19, 25 says, standing near the cross were Jesus' mother and his mother's sister, that would be his aunt, Mary, the wife of Clopas, that's probably a friend of his mom's, and Mary Magdalene, that's one of his personal friends and followers. They're all gathered around watching him. Mom, how do you watch that? I'm sure every bit of her as a mom wanted to run away, just run away. I can't see this. But there's probably something else in her at that moment that said, I can't leave his side. Is this painful? Yes. Am I gonna need therapy and PTSD later on? Yes. But I'm gonna stand here and watch, and he's gonna know until he passes away that his mama didn't leave his side. And so as painful as it was, she never leaves the cross. She watches him and stays by him as long as he's breathing until he dies. It says in verse number 26, when Jesus saw his mother standing there, beside the disciple he loved. He said to her, "Dear woman, here's your son." And he said to the disciple, "Here is your mother." And from then on, the disciple took her into his home. In other words, Jesus is saying, "Mom, you know, you're older now and your kids are grown and your husband's gone." But this, he says to his disciple, people believe it was John, his disciple. There's a conversation there. But he says, "John, you take mama in, take care of her. Mom, you're gonna be taken care of." And while he's on the cross suffering, he's worried about his mom, and his mom is worried about him. And there's nothing she can do but watch. And he dies. And they take the bodies off of crucifixion. They make sure they're dead, and then they take their bodies off the crosses. The common practice was to take their bodies to the fire pit of Gehenna, which is nearby Jerusalem, and toss people's bodies in there to be burned up. That's what happened to crucified people. But someone begged for the life of Jesus. They begged for his body to be placed in their personal tomb. And that's another story, but Jesus was brought to a tomb, and they put guards at the tomb because they knew he was a celebrity and they wanted to guard it, keep it safe. And Mary and the others, they followed to see where the body was being laid because they wanted to come back after the Passover was coming. They had to do it quickly. Passover was over. They could come back and they could have a proper wrapping of his body and spices and kind of an embalming process that they kind of rushed that day. And don't miss this now. Mary's not coming back waiting for him to rise from the dead. Nobody was. I say this often. Jesus had been telling everybody, "I'm going to die, I'm going to rise again, I'm going to die and rise again." No one could understand it, not even them. They were coming by to watch the resurrection. They were coming by to treat his body, to have a graveside service, so to speak, to have final, kind of have closure. That was their plan. But we all know what happened, don't we? On the third day, up from the grave, he arose and everything changes. And for the next six weeks, Jesus is seen all over Jerusalem. Now remember, Jerusalem is full of people from Passover to Pentecost, about 7 weeks. People would come for both festivals. Some people would stay instead of traveling back and forth. And a crowd saw him killed. And thousands of people over the next 6 weeks see him alive and running around. His mom, his brothers, his disciples, 500 at one time, others at other times, just many people. And it starts a groundswell movement that will change the world to this day. But he spends time there with his family and others. At the end of 6 weeks, he goes for good. He leaves for good. And you say, well, that must be easier because at least he didn't die this time. No, but moms, when your kids go away, is it easy? She's like, "When will I see you again?" "Oh, I'll see you when I die someday myself," right? He's gone. And he says to his followers, "Okay, I'm going to go prepare a place for you. You stay here and get busy spreading the message everywhere you go. Take the good news of the gospel of God's love to the whole world and change the world." And they did, and we are. But here's the thing. First, let's look at the passage, Acts 1:12. "Then the apostles returned to Jerusalem from the Mount of Olives, a distance of half a mile. When they arrived," Jesus is gone, "when they arrived, they went upstairs to the upstairs room of the house they were staying. Here are the names of those who were present: Peter, John, James, Andrew, Philip, Thomas, Bartholomew, Matthew, James, son of Alphaeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas, son of James." These are the 12 disciples minus Judas Iscariot, who killed himself. They're all gathered. Verse 14, look at verse 14. "They all met together and were constantly united in prayer, along with Mary, the mother of Jesus, and several other women and the brothers of Jesus." And I just can't get over that thought to me. We have tracked Mary from being a very young woman planning her wedding and watching a pregnancy disrupt it, to now being an older woman, widowed, kids are all grown and gone, and she's been through a lot. But here she is, the young Mary saying, "Lord, I'm going to talk to you, I'm going to pray, whatever you want, I'm your servant." And here's older Mary many decades later, and she's saying, "Lord, I'm your servant. I'm here praying, whatever you want." Moms, one of the things we often struggle with, I know from what I do as a pastor, I know this. Many moms, you struggle as you get older, women, you struggle as you get older with your identity. Like, who am I? Because when you become a mom, you're just like, I'm the servant to my family, I guess, you know, and that's, and you are, and you're glad to be, you love it. And you take care of them. But what happens sometimes is you can lose your own identity. And as life changes and gets older and the family changes and their stages of life change, and they're babies and they exhaust you. And who am I? I'm a butt wiper. That's who I am. And then they become a teenager. And they're like, who am I now? I'm a mother of a kid who now knows more than me. And then who am I now? I'm a member of a child who's moved away. Maybe they do something bad and it makes you wonder, am I a failure? Maybe they're doing good, but they're elsewhere. What do I do now? It's such an identity crisis time for many moms, many times. And Mary has gone through all the spectrum, and in her older years, she's in the upper room talking to God and saying, what's next? Because here's the thing. Mary was more than the mother of Jesus. She was a child of God. And moms, I want you to hear me loud and clear right now. You are a mother, and that's wonderful, but you're more than a mother. Not that mother's a big part of the thing we celebrate today, but you're more than that. Right? We get excited about you. My kids, when Brett and Carly come over with a baby, we oftentimes say, oh, Aura Mae is here, yay! Oh, and Brett and Carly are here too, that's nice. And it's a joke, we're making a joke, we're laughing. But you know, moms, you can kind of feel that way, right? Like, yeah, I'm just the person chasing around after him. Don't lose your identity. You're a mother, and that's wonderful. We honor moms today, but you're more than a mom. You are a daughter of God. And your identity is more than in this part of your life. And at some point, this part of your life will change, and it will change again and change again. And if we're not careful, we'll find ourselves saying, well, who am I now? And Mary said, I know who I am now. I'm a child of God. I'm a daughter of God. I'm a servant of the Lord. And we've seen her in the whole arc. And some of you moms, you've been through this arc. Some of you are in the early stages. Some of you have been all the way through it, from the joys of motherhood, the joy of becoming a mother, to the difficulty of caring for your children, to the stress of teenagers, to the pride of having adult children, to the independence of adult children, to the frustration of adult children, not coming around enough, not taking care of themselves the right way, not being treated well by others perhaps. In some of your cases, losing a child. And you say, who am I in all of that? You're a daughter of God. Why do we honor Mary? Well, we honor Mary because she was the one who was the mother to the Messiah, the Christ child. But it's more than that. We honor Mary because of what she chose to do and who she chose to be. You see, motherhood changed her life, but it did not change her faith. Motherhood changed her life. Motherhood changes all of our lives. Your life, moms, doesn't it? Some of the moms, when you become a mom, you get older. You're like, I realize the older I get how much it changed my life. But it didn't change Mary's faith. If anything, it strengthened her faith. Because young Mary is sitting there with a whole future in front of her, a blank canvas to be written on, planning her wedding and planning her future. And God comes along and she says, God, let's talk about it. I'm your servant. Whatever you want, let's do it. What do you want? And here she is as an older woman. Kids have grown. Husband's gone. She's sitting there saying, who am I now? She's in an upper room saying, let's get this movement started. What needs to be done? She's praying again. She's saying, God, I'm your servant. What do you want me to do? And as we celebrate you moms today and the wonderful privilege and blessing you are to be moms, remember that you are a daughter of God. And find your identity ultimately in that. And I hope that your journey through life, while it changes your life, it only serves to strengthen your faith in the one who made you and the one who loves you and the one who never leaves your side. Know that he loves you. Love him back. Know that he's with you. Serve him in every season of life. Motherhood's a big one. You never stop being a mom once you become a mom. But it's not the only thing you are. It's not the only way that season of life will go. However it looks today, however it looks in 5 years and 10 years and 30 years from now, keep your eyes on Jesus.